You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Thanks for checking out episode 41 of the Van Flip Podcast. And first off, let me start by saying Happy New Year to you and yours. And I think it's been a crazy 2021 thus far, so far, and we're only like a handful of days into it. But I think we've gotten the best news earlier this week that we could have probably asked for. Big Dr. F of the CDC or whatever is saying that we may have live shows back in the fall. So that's something to look forward to, guys, you know. Fingers crossed, all that will go through and we can get back to some kind of normalcy of, you know, seeing shows and whatnot. I was talking to JP earlier last week and I kind of reflected back and was thinking, damn, it's been 10 months or so since we, you know, went to a show. And for me and him, we go to shows on the weekly. So you'll find out in this podcast how we talk about the frequency of going to shows and stuff like that. But it's just interesting that we've kind of not gone to shows in the last 10 months. And I kind of asked him, I was like, hey, is this kind of what like normal people do that don't care about going to shows? Anyway, you know the drill. If you're listening to us on a platform that you can rate and review us, please do so. Give us the highest rating you can. It definitely helps us out in the podcast algorithm world or whatever. Check out lambgoat.com for all your breaking news stories around the hardcore metal world. Subscribe to Lambgoat's YouTube page and you can watch this episode and others in video format and check out our other Lambgoat content we have on there. Make sure you like Lambgoat on Facebook and you can also follow the Big LG on Twitter and Instagram at Lambgoat. Also, you can follow me at Lurk City on Instagram and Twitter. Go ahead and tweet me the last show you went to and let's reminisce about going to shows until the fall. And just because I feel like most of you guys are lazy, all these links are going to be listed in our show description. So go check those out. We'll even have our guests' links there, who, by the way, is Matt Fox, one of the founding members of Shai Halud, and also guitar player in Zombie Apocalypse.
Oh, yeah, what's this? I feel this. Oh, yeah, this is stuff. Oh, no. Lambgoat presents the Van Flip Podcast.
Checking it out on the Van Flip Podcast. Thanks for listening in on this episode. And we are lucky enough to be joined with Matt Fox. He is one of the founding members of the band Shai Halud from South Florida, formed in the mid-90s, but also Matt more recently has been playing in another band, Zombie Apocalypse, which was also formed in the 90s as well. Matt, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
How's it going, Matt?
Oh, going very well. Like I said earlier, COVID-free, so I'm happy.
Is that because you don't leave the home? Or
I definitely don't like leaving home too often. But yeah, you know, I don't leave my apartment too often. And when I do, I'm always properly masked. So, you know, knock on wood, I'm safe for now.
Yeah, same. Now, you obviously, Shai Halud hasn't been particularly active in recent years. What's your like?
What's my excuse?
What's your date? No, well, not that. I'll tongue lash you for that in a bit. But what's like your day gig? Or do you just sit around and write lyrics all day?
I wish. For a long time, that's what I wanted to do. Right now, I'm in school. So I saved up some money, and I'm going to school for medical administration. And that takes up a lot of my time. I wish I would much rather sit around writing lyrics all day. But that's my day gig is school. Hope to be employed within that field by hopefully the spring.
So so it's a medical administrator type position.
I don't even know what that is exactly. It could go in a lot of ways. You can do management of a room, or medical coding, medical billing. There's a few different options okay. for me there. But yeah, you know, when I stopped trying to do Shai Hulud full time, you know, I decided I had to do something, and I didn't want to just get a job that any uneducated slob could get. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I wanted to do something different. So I went, upon recommendation of a friend, started going into the medical field. You know, people will always be
death in need. And taxes and medical care.
Yeah, of course. If I was only smart enough to be a doctor, I would do that, but not nearly yeah. smart enough to be a doctor.
I hear that. Well, so when did Shai Hulud cease being a full-time band?
Geez, the timeline is wonky in my head.
I saw you guys toured in 2016, May of 2016 or something like that.
Yeah, that might be. That sounds about accurate. We were in Japan. Our last show was in Japan. You know, not a last show, but the last right. show that we played was in Japan. We've gotten together in the past before COVID hit. We got together and practiced, but yeah. So it's been about 4 years since we last played together as you know, professionally, if you want to call it professionally.
When you say when you say you guys get together, does that include Zombie Apocalypse? Because it's basically like the same band with a different singer, correct?
No, it's actually quite a few different members. We do share the singer of Zombie Apocalypse has two singers, and one of the singers has been in Shai Hulud before as a singer, way back in like 2005 or 2006, maybe even later than that. But he's now playing bass in Shai Hulud. So aside from that, that's the only members that we currently share. However, Zombie Apocalypse's drummer used to be Shai Hulud's full-time drummer. So like I've said on other podcasts,
are there any musicians in existence that have not been a member of Shai Hulud at one time
no.
or another?
No, there's not one.
All right. Just checking.
Yeah. No, yeah.
I was looking over your Wikipedia. Not yours, but the band. And yeah, I mean, I've obviously covered you guys for a long time. So I guess I was, you know, more or less aware that there were a lot of peripheral player. I mean, obviously you're the heart, or have been, you know, for some time, and Matt Fletcher. But yeah, even I was a bit surprised by the sheer volume of individuals that have come through and gone out the door.
Well, you can't really take the Wikipedia as fact. There are people on there, a slew of people on there. When I've looked, which has been a while now, when I last looked, that have never been in the band. Some
people you don't even know, right?
People I don't know. I'm not joking. And some friends that joked around, or had somebody else joke around and add them to the Wikipedia list. But yeah, it's not that extensive.
All right. Well, I'm going to add myself as a former, I'll say, tambourine player or something, just to beef up my resume.
Please do. The more the merrier. That's what I say. But like I've said on other podcasts, there's a community within Shai Hulud, and you know, Matt Fletcher has branched out to his current band, Life Force. And our bass player, who's filling in or taking over for Matt Fletcher, like I said, he sings for Zombie, and he used to sing for Hulud. So it's a community of people that we've always worked with. And again, the drummer of Zombie Apocalypse is the guy who recorded on our last record, Reach Beyond the Sun. So it's a nice little community of people that are all friends.
So you've been... Shai Hulud was like your full-time deal for, geez, what, 20 years?
Yeah, roughly.
Okay.
You know, tried to keep it going, tried to do it full-time as much as opportunities would allow. So, yeah, we were active for a while there.
Yeah. Now, some of your, I don't know, you know, people listening, you know, some people probably know a lot about the band, and there's other people that have a cursory, you know, knowledge of Shai-Hulud. But for those that don't know, you guys have had some notable people in the band. I guess most notable would be Chad Gilbert, who,
sure,
you know, went on to Newfound Glory fame. I guess he sang on your first full length and your first EP.
And yeah, and then the follow-up split with Indecision after the album came out.
Okay. I guess if you had started going in the pop punk direction, maybe maybe you'd be sitting on some gold records like Chad.
Maybe. Pop punk has never necessarily been my thing. It always, Chad always loved it though. You know, keep in mind, I met Chad, he joined Shai-Hulud when he was 15. I think I met him when he was about 14. Yeah, if you could believe that. And, you know, for as long as I've met him, he's always loved pop punk and hardcore, and metal for that matter too.
Yeah. What was I going to say? He sang on, I guess, probably, do you consider, you know, that LP to be sort of your, the most renowned Shai-Hulud record? I mean, from my perspective, that would seem to be the seminal, you know, offering, not to demean any of the other records, but that's the one, you know, to me that, that was the most influential and probably, sure, the, you know, most people have a soft spot in their heart for most Hulud fans.
Sure. I mean, all, you know, also not to belittle any of the other records, they all have their followings. But, you know, Hearts was when it was considered the classic lineup. It's the classic album. You know, it's the only album that's in Decibel's Hall of Fame, you know, and there, it's got to be that for a reason. So, yeah, it's probably our most renowned album. But I am, again, happy to say that all the records did find a bit of a following. So,
right. Now, as a, one of the progenitors of metalcore, I've got to ask you, who invented metalcore? And I know that's not a question with a one-word answer, but I assume you're not going to say Atreyu. So enlighten me.
You should have let him try. He might have.
That's the first true. Time... Well, the first time I heard the term metalcore, if I remember correctly, was in a Warzone ad. I think it was when they signed to a major or something bigger than Rev, whatever record label they were on, Relativity maybe. There was an ad for Warzone, possibly Open Your Eyes. I'm not sure which record it was, but it said, you know, Warzone, New York metalcore. So that's the first time I'd ever heard the term. And I'm pretty sure that was in the 80s. But that term had been thrown around for a long time. Like I've said before in other interviews, my friends and I used to throw it around specifically when talking about like Earth Crisis. Because when we first got, when we first got Destroy the Machines, I remember my friend and I, Chad, who's in Strong Arm and Further Seems Forever, Big Chad as opposed to Little Chad, who sang for us. So Chad and I were listening to Destroy the Machines in my grandmother's apartment where I lived at the time. And
I'm sure she appreciated that.
Yeah, she definitely did. All the loud heavy metal. But we were listening to it, and we looked at each other, and we said, my God, this is just not – it's not hardcore. It's like metal core. And then, you know, truth be told, I looked at him, and I said, yeah, but I like it. And he goes, I like it too.
And the rest was history.
Yeah. And then we started, you know, joking around, calling well, it was tongue-in-cheek, calling bands like Earth Crisis and Coalesce and Dead Guy were all of that strain of heavier hardcore, you know, with arguably metal sounds, but undeniably a hardcore ethic.
Yep, yep. Yeah, I hear you. And that's how I felt about, you know, not only Earth Crisis, but you know, Marauder, Master Killer.
Sure.
You could, I guess, there's so many flavors of metalcore, and I, you know, I'm doing a disservice to everything by even using the term, just kind of a joke at this point.
It was always a joke to us. I mean, we put it on a t-shirt once. We called ourselves, we said it was Terran Metalcore. And when we started recording our second album, That Within Blood All Tempered, we got very musically creative around that time. And I think we joked around on a t-shirt and called it a profoundly misanthropic metal corchestra. You know, so, you know, there's always been a tongue-in-cheek attitude within Shai Hulud, and we never took the term seriously, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, that's a healthy outlook.
We certainly didn't invent it.
Yeah, I you know, knowing how humble you are in the first place, I certainly didn't expect you to take credit, nor would it be wise for anyone to do so, but certainly
sure.
not any band that wasn't, I guess, formed in the late 80s or early 90s.
Yeah.
And I'm certainly not Atreyu.
Yeah, sure. I'm giving it to Warzone.
That's fair. That's fair. You know, you hear all kinds of, well, I've read that, but I had never, heard that little anecdote about the advertisement. And
yeah. I think I posted it on, Facebook or Instagram or both, like a couple years back. I'll see if I can find it and send it to you.
Yeah, that's something. Well, we'll have to track down whoever wrote the verbiage for that and give them some kind of, I don't know, Founders Award or something.
Yeah, that's the earliest that I can recollect ever hearing metalcore or reading metalcore for that matter.
Now, you know, you were part of that. I feel like, and again, this is perhaps old jaded man speaking. But, you know, metalcore, and Dave, you could probably speak more to this, but metalcore circa 2008 is not metalcore 2000 or 1998, 1997. I feel like at some point it became, you know, we got the heavy verses with the clean choruses and a breakdown two thirds of the way through, just this formulaic notion of what metalcore is. And unfortunately, and maybe fortunately, I don't know, you know, the metalcore youth are not fully cognizant of the roots, and I guess that's common of any generation. You know, very few youngings take the time to learn the roots. And I know if I post anything, you know, so-and-so, metalcore, change metalcore, this band wouldn't exist without that band, I get a lot of people tweeting boomer at me.
Sure.
And I'm like, I don't know. I have a certain let me put it this way, as succinctly as I can, since I've already been verbose. Too many people think Asking Alexandria is the be all end all of metalcore.
Oh, are we going
there? That pains me.
Are we going there?
I guess so. I can't comment. I've never heard of the band.
I was going to ask you actually, Matt, because you guys were such a early, you know, an early band in those metalcore days. If you even kept up with the genre as it progressed.
No, I didn't. When the singy choruses started becoming popular, or maybe even before it was popular, you know, it just wasn't my thing, and neither are breakdowns for that matter. So, you know, I say for that matter a lot, I just realized. But yeah, you know, breakdowns for the sake of them and singy choruses, if anything starts to trend, you can almost usually safely say that I'm not into it. I never kept up with metalcore. The last metalcore that I know of, you know, would have been whatever the last Earth Crisis did.
Interesting.
And I don't even refer to Earth Crisis anymore as metalcore. Metalcore has definitely evolved into its own thing, and very distinctly, you know, Shai Hulud, Earth Crisis are not metalcore. Both bands are just heavier hardcore with a progressive nature and, again, a distinct hardcore ethic.
Right. So I'm a little bit behind Alex as far as wave of, like, bands and stuff like that. So to me, like, the metalcore that I refer to would be, I guess, like, more early 2000s, like metalcore bands, like, you know, I guess like Norma Jean would be one of them in that time frame. But like bands like Earth Crisis to me would always be more hardcore. Like I would have referred to them more as a hardcore band, I guess, when I was younger.
Again, so would I. But, you know, just going back to what I said earlier, originally it was just so, especially Destroy the Machines. I mean, I'd love all Earth Crisis records. Even Slither, but but when talking about Destroy the Machines, it was so much heavier than anything that we had heard in the hardcore scene,
right?
At least out in Florida, that, you know, that jokingly that term came out. But no, there's no way in hell I would ever refer to Earth Crisis now or even in the 2000s as metalcore. I mean, right.
Me looking at it, you know, like after the fact, like after that, it wasn't as groundbreaking maybe to everybody's ears as it was, you know, years later.
Right.
Yeah. It's a generational thing. And I didn't mean to get us down that road.
It's a fun road.
I don't consider like the Asking Alexandria stuff, though, like technically metalcore. There's like a definite like Hot Topic mallcore kind of vein in metalcore. I think metalcore is on. I mean, never mind. We don't necessarily need to go down that route because. Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't want to bring them up in a pejorative manner. I just feel as though there's a certain segment of bands that have, you know, have
capitalized.
And were sort of heralded as genre forefathers when they weren't. Or they weren't forefathers of anything that I would consider respectable. And I don't mean to shit on that band because I don't really know their stuff. I've heard enough, you know, of their earlier stuff, which, and they've changed a lot too, Asking Alexandria. So I don't want to harp on them. But genres aside, I know you've told Dave that you didn't really follow, you know, metalcore. What about some of your peers from, 2000, 1999, and when I say peers, not necessarily stylistic peers, but that whole scene, the Trustkill, the Ferret, Corner of the World, whether it's Converge or Poison the Well, those bands. Did you, I guess by virtue of touring with a lot of those bands, you're sort of forced to keep up, but were any of those bands, a band that you just have always kept up with much the same way you have Earth Crisis?
Geez.
Or did you completely just check out?
Well, I don't know that I don't know that I checked out, but there's, as you age, which, you know, you're younger than I am, I'm assuming.
Barely.
but, you know, as you age, so you'll know, the filter becomes finer and finer, you know, and fewer things start getting in. And I would say around the 2000s is when my filter almost became locked. And it's definitely locked now, you know, when I listen to music, you know, today I'm listening to old Pestilence. I still listen to Metallica. I'm wearing a Pixie shirt. I love the Pixies, Bad Brains, Uniform Choice. I kind of stuck with all of those bands, and really, you know, once the filter closed, it never really opened again. And that probably happened around the 2000s. You know, I'm friends with the bands of those eras, but I don't necessarily listen to bands that we were peers with. Sure. You know, for me, if I want to hear a hardcore band, I always go back to the Bad Brains. That's, you know, first and foremost.
Yeah, I gotcha. You're not putting on getting nails or something. That's, yeah, I think a lot of that is an age thing. Personally, you know, let's face it, when we're teenagers, kids even, young or early 20s, you're just kind of absorbing everything and finding your way and your musical likes. But then at some point you just, and I can speak for everybody, but a lot of people, they, as you describe it, your filters, you know, sort of close, and you're just not, I don't know if it's either the motivation or the energy, or there's just too much going on in life. I think it's a, you know, a combination of all those things.
Yeah,
I
mean, a combination of all those, for sure.
It's having a family, and it's just like, okay, I have the next hour to, you know, find new music to give these bands a shot, or I can sit on the couch, read this book, and just put on some old Billy Joel or something. And hey, you know, I choose the latter because it's the path of least resistance.
You can never, never go wrong with Billy Joel.
I agree.
When you're younger, you're hungry for new music, and that hunger eventually ends. Every once in a while, the filter unlocks and something sneaks in. Like, I think the last band that snuck in for me, and this is, you know, showing my age because it's an older band at this point, but that band would be Tragedy. You know, when they came out, I said, "Oh, okay, well, this I like." you know, I can pry open the filter a little bit to let these guys in, but you know, not much gets in. And if I'm going to listen to new music, it's going to be older music that I'm not familiar with. Like today, I said I was listening to Pestilence. Pestilence is a Dutch thrash death metal band that I was never fully familiar with. I always liked, and I would rather explore their old catalog, or for that matter, I would.
It's a handy phrase.
It's a handy phrase. Yeah, I would rather explore the Led Zeppelin that I'm not familiar with. You know what I mean?
I've done that.
Oh yeah.
Now, a long time ago, but probably in my 20s. I was always a Pink Floyd guy, but you know, aside from the heavy stuff I listened to, but I think I was talking about this maybe when we had Ben Kohler on recently. I read that Hammer of the Gods book, about Zeppelin, and that just triggered this whole thing where, you know, everybody knows the big hits, the Whole Lot of Loves and the Cashmeres, but sure. I just did a deep dive on their whole catalog, and there's, like many vast catalogs, there's plenty of gems to be found. But I totally agree with you that I'm, you know, the same way. I feel like as I get older, I need to impart some wisdom. And to do so, I have to go back and cover some of the band, not cover, you know, from a journalistic standpoint, but listen to some of the bands that I didn't give their proper due. And I'm not talking about necessarily underground hardcore bands, but, you know, revisit the David Bowie catalog, or just, you know, some of these icons that, you know, shame to say I am woefully ignorant of.
Well, I first of all, just as a general, on a general spectrum, I am woefully ignorant. But when it comes to music, you know, my Zeppelin knowledge is really Led Zeppelin 2 and 4 and the first. But I don't know.
Got to spend more time with 3, man.
Yeah. Well, you
and
know,
Physical Graffiti.
Yeah, I know the Immigrant Song, and I've listened to Immigrant Physical Graffiti, which I love, but I'm not familiar with it. So, yeah, just repeating what we've already said, I definitely would go back into the older things that I need to know rather than new bands that are probably not doing anything that I care about, sad to say.
I try to...
It's all been done.
I try to mix it up. I try to explore old stuff like Alex was doing with old discographies and such. Mainly probably like older scene or hardcore bands that I also didn't give the time of day to. But I also try to keep a somewhat finger on the pulse of like what news coming out, because you never do know.
You're doing it the right way.
It's definitely hard because I mean, most of the stuff that we post about, I try to throw on a playlist, and I try to listen to that playlist every month and whatnot, just to kind of get a, you know, an idea of what other things are out there. Because obviously there are other little genres I've never explored in general, but
that is quite noble for sure.
Yeah. Well, you do make a good point. I guess I do the same, although not for the altruistic reasons that he does. I am forced to via Lambda. You know, I still have to cover bands, and so I'm exposed to lots of new music, whether I like it or not. Some good stuff, some bad stuff. But I suppose from that standpoint, I'm up to speed, not as much of a Luddite as I sound. But there's very little that moves me in this day and age. And again, that is my age speaking. But it is nice to discover, you know, a good song here and there. But it takes a lot for me to be motivated to go out and get an album. And we talked about this, or to listen to an album. And, you know, this theme just keeps coming back for me. You know, the internet, it was just a kids can't appreciate. I've said this so many times. I just can't help myself. Can't appreciate spending money on a CD or an album, even a cassette, if you go back far enough. And that's all you had money for. So you're going to spend the next week with that album. And more often than not, you're probably going to love it or fall in love with it, or at least, you know, appreciate it. And that's just, and it's no fault of, you know, the younger generations. It's just they have so much out there vying for their attention that they aren't going to, it's very it's seldom that I think your average kid, teenager, whatever, is going to sit there and listen to an entire album. They're just listening to singles or hopping around YouTube or Spotify, whatever it is. And frankly, I'm thankful. I mean, don't get me wrong, I wish I was 20 years old or whatever, but I'm thankful that I grew up in that era where I'm cruising the liner notes to, you know, find another band to check out. And yeah, those trips to the record store where you got $20 and you're coming home with something, maybe two things, and you're going to give it its due. I just, it pains me that sort of thing, it doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, those were good times. For me, it was I would go to the record store with $10 because I got, when I don't know if my mom was cheap or what, but my mom used to give, when I was around 13, she would give me $5 a week. So I remember telling my friends, wow, if I save up for 2 weeks, I can go every 2 weeks and buy a new album. You know, and I remember going out and getting Voivod's Dimension Hatross on cassette. Even a little after that, Sick of It All's Blood, Sweat, and No Tears.
Classic.
When I saw that on cassette, you know, that's around the time that I was trying. I knew hardcore existed, but I couldn't find the door anywhere, you know. Sick of It All really was a main door for me into hardcore. But yeah, those were fun times. I also miss the times where 7 inches were like three, four, you know, maybe $5 if it was like a premier 7-inch with, you know, premium packaging. That was also a good time for music because, you know, you could go to the record store, you know, an independent record store with $20 and pick up a few 7-inches. That's how I got Earth Crisis. You know, I'd never heard them before. I picked up Firestorm and looked pissed, and there's a guy with an X on the back, I think. You know, so I said, okay, this is great. But totally. Yeah, we're always gonna feel nostalgic about the way we got into music. But I imagine 20 years from now, when Spotify's no longer around, you know, someone's going to say, oh, the days of Spotify were great. I could just sit up, you know, reminisce about, what was it? The thing that Lars Ulrich hated.
Napster.
You know?
But I mean, true. I think it's just the evolution of ingesting music in general, because, you know, we were also bottlenecked by all that, you know, so we didn't get to explore and absorb as much music as we would have wanted. Although, who's to say it's the wrong way or the right way? You know what I mean? Because I also enjoyed all that stuff, and having the time to sit next to the CD player with headphones on, even, in, you know, that was my like record player moment. You know, I would sit in my room with the boombox on with the headphones in, just reading, you know, the liner notes and looking at the CD art and stuff like that. There is something to be had with that, but also, yeah, you know,
that's what I did with cassettes. To a lesser degree, vinyl, because I was the annoying kid that had to bring my music into your car. So I bought everything on cassette. My smarter friends, who weren't obnoxious, still to this day have all of their metal vinyl that is long gone for me because it was all on tape, you know, and it got worn out or ruined.
Yeah,
but it was worth it. It was worth it because I couldn't bear what my friends were listening to. So I had to, you know, I had to bring my Slayer cassettes into their car.
No, cassettes were, you needed a cassette, yeah, for the car, of course, yeah. Or your boom box or whatever. You couldn't go mobile with the turntable. No, you know, I had the same problem, but I will say when CDs came out, just the audio quality, I jumped right on the CD bandwagon.
Took me a few years.
I had a bunch of cassettes. But never, yeah. I never really got it. Turntables were always such a pain in the ass to me. And, you know, scratching them and whatever. Maybe when I was like 7, I remember listening to like Crimson and Clover 7 inches and random shit. But I went right to cassettes and never really collected vinyl, which, you know, from a monetary standpoint, I sort of regret because you can, sure, you can make some good money.
Yeah. Well, if I had all of the tapes that I had on vinyl, I'd be sitting on some really good stuff.
Well, even if you had the tapes.
Well, yeah, I was going to say I've been, you know, selling some of my stuff in my vast collection, and some of those, you know, I sold a Morbid Angel Covenant cassette for, I don't know, like $30, and you know, some of the random ones. I had this black, my first cassette that I remember getting, first hard, heavy punk, hardcore, whatever you want to call it. Was damaged by Black Flag, and I could probably sell that for $40-some, it seems like. But that one is too much sentimental value. But all I'm saying is, you know, cassettes have some tangible value these days as well.
Yeah, the they're on the come up right now for sure. It's like throwbacks. That's what I was going to say. Like, this generation is kind of tapping into the older stuff, though, too. I think more so than like maybe the one prior to it. But the younger guys with the Spotify and everything like that can easily trace back, you know, bands that they may like now. They can easily trace back the lineage of like where that sound may have come from. So that's also why I think tapes are coming back, because, you know, they're the ones, like newer bands are, you know, trying to push that rhetoric and stuff like that, too. So.
Well, I think it's always nice to have something physical.
Of course.
Having that collection was just a great thing. And when you had your iPod, you know, the first sort of digital collection of music, it just wasn't the same. You know, look at my 8,000 CDs, or look at my iPod. I have 797 songs and 15 playlists. And yeah, it just doesn't, it's not the same.
Yeah. So few records come out that I... that I want to own physically. And sometimes records come out that I do want to own physically. And I have succumbed to it. You know, I go to Spotify. I'm very excited for the forthcoming Exodus record, which is supposed to be out this summer. I plan on buying that on vinyl, but who knows, you know, I may end up going to Spotify and just being satisfied with that. So I've definitely succumbed to streaming much more than I ever thought I would.
Oh, it's just so convenient.
Yeah, and I'm looking right now. You know, I've saved, out of the thousands of CDs that I have owned in the past, you know, I'm still looking at a collection of a few hundred that I just can't get rid of.
Nice.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's, you know, the old Revelation CDs, or my Celtic Frost CDs, you know, these things I'm just never going to get rid of. Because again, I didn't buy them when I got into CDs. I loved the format because I could bring it to everybody's car.
Yep.
So,
yeah, I still think CDs are, you know, my format of choice. That's, it's the perfect, it's the happy medium between, you know, quality audio wise and compact physical, you know, entity.
Yeah. No, oh, well. I'm still down with CDs. I'm never going to sell the ones I'm never going to sell. But in another room, I've got about 500 at bare minimum that I can't wait to get rid of.
Oh, well, give Dave your address. He'll be right there, and he will make you an offer.
Yeah, oh, yeah?
I started collecting CDs a couple years ago, or a year ago, or a year and a half ago, and I'm up to like 150, but...
Oh, well, if you're interested, all joking aside, I have, you know, a lot. They're all good as far as, you know, it's not nothing bands. It's, you know, bands that you would know. So, yeah, maybe you can give these CDs a new home.
Maybe. We'll definitely.
You can sign every single CD, and that will dramatically increase the value. Right?
Yeah, by millions.
Yeah. Well, so I didn't mean to send us down that.
Well, don't get lost, but don't get lost in the streaming quality of the audio, because if you if you listen to streaming long enough and then you go back to CD, you'll definitely notice it.
Yeah, I don't know that I have a keen enough ear for that. Because
you played too many concerts, man. Your hearing's damaged beyond all repair.
Besides the concert, I'm like a million years old. Who can hear anything?
That's true. Yeah. I mean, my kids like play. They have these things on their phone where, you know, they play like these really high frequencies, and they're all astounded that I can't hear the ones that they hear. And I'm just like, you know, I still remember from school, you know, the ideal hearing for a human being, 20 hertz to 20 K hertz or something like that. But I specifically remember, this is probably a Full Sail. It's just why I went there, you know, to become an audio engineer, of course. But I remember specifically the instructor saying that the perfect hearing could only be achieved by 12 or 13-year-old girls in Scandinavian nations for whatever reason. Everyone else, just the noise pollution and just the, you know, the environmental you know, impact of their surroundings would never allow them to hear at the frequencies that the human ear was actually capable of. But in any case, my kids play stuff that's far below 20 kilohertz, and I can't hear it now. You know, part of that is age, and part of it is listening to hardcore metal at extremely loud volumes and banging on my drum set and plugging in my guitar. And yeah, so I'm screwed any way you slice it. When I'm like 80, I'm going to be, I don't know, I'll have a cochlear implant or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I went to an audiologist not that long ago, and my hearing, she told me, was a lot better than she had compared to other people that had played music. Mm-hmm. I was pretty pretty fastidious with wearing earplugs I started wearing earplugs when Shai Alud started. Because I had, you know, I had punk rock and hardcore bands before Shai Alud started. So by the time I was 23, I was wearing earplugs. And I can't think of a Shai Alud show where I went without. So
that's definitely good.
Yeah, I've done my best to preserve my hearing. But
I think that's probably commonplace among, you know, artists, musicians who play frequently. And I, you know, was never one of those. I feel like, you know, most of my hearing damage, probably not that I can't hear anything, but what damage I have was probably sustained at, you know, concerts in my early 20s, you know, where I just wasn't diligent about bringing earplugs to shows and for whatever reason caught up in the moment. But y'all, I mean, anyone who hasn't worn plugs has been there where they go to that show and then for the next 3 hours, their ears are ringing and it's just, you know, you deal with it, but do that, you know, several dozen times. And obviously there are some long-term effects.
No. I mean, I definitely have tinnitus to a degree. If it's too quiet, I can hear it. But, you know, if they're luckily enough, if there's music playing at just a normal volume, or even if the air conditioner is on, yeah, you know, I don't hear it, but it's there. Because when I went to metal concerts as a teenager, I certainly the last thing on my mind was earplugs. I didn't wise up until I started playing music on a regular basis. And funny little note, which is probably not funny and probably won't interest anyone, but
there's a setup.
Yeah, this is nonsense. But I hate listening to loud music. You know, when I listened to Pestilence earlier today, it's at a nice,
really,
or yeah, it's at a normal volume, probably lower than most people would care for. But, yeah, I don't like the oppression of loud music.
I feel like, you know, I would listen to metal and hardcore louder if it wasn't disruptive to those around me or, you know, dangerous to my hearing. But I, you know, it's hard for me to dial back. A couple weeks ago, I went on this Burnt by the Sun kick, and I just, you know, some bands are just, you know, you really want to turn them up. Not you, Matt Fox, but, you know, your average hardcore, whatever fan, it just, because they really just, they lend themselves to that visceral impact. And,
sure.
I'm always finding myself like forcing myself to turn the volume knob down. Just like, come on, Alex, get it together. You're damaging your hearing. I know you want to turn it up, but let's turn it back maybe
so 2 degrees
and see if you can notice. Well, it's, you know, it's this inner dialogue with myself that I think I'm insane, actually, the more I discuss this. But yeah, it's a problem. I wish I had your discipline or whatever it is, your penchant for listening to what would be considered loud music at reasonable volumes. That's yeah. very something.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. That
refined.
Very refined.
An aristocrat, you are.
Yeah. The aristocrat. yeah, I like music at reasonable volumes. Because I do like to hear the nuances of the guitars. And, you know, for me, it's not just the rage. I like to know what the bands are playing, so I can process it better at lower volumes.
Well, and I think that's an interesting point, and particularly because you are in Shai Hulud. And I mean, that's one of the things that I think, you know, I always liked about your band, much unlike a lot of the metalcore, call them what you will bands that are just, you know, I don't want to say one dimensional, but just there's not a lot happening under the surface where, I listened to some of your old records today that I haven't listened to in so long, like Hearts and Ill-Tempered. And it always amazes me how much is happening. These subtle guitar licks and undercurrents of melody and
Too much.
At loud volume, I think, would definitely, you know, take away from the nuance that exists in a lot of your catalog.
Yeah.
Unlike Burnt by the Sun, or again, I love Burnt by the Sun, so I don't want to shit on them, but unlike a lot of other bands.
But Burnt by the Sun is, you know, from what I remember, more focused on just, you know, rage.
Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah. I mean, like I was saying, with Tragedy. Tragedy is another band that is always nice to hear louder because it's the rage. Not that I do listen to it louder, but I would get why somebody listens to bands like that focus on that punch, you know, reasonable volume.
Shai Hulud was always sort of you guys weren't the most commercial. I'm not talking sound, but just your whole image and your marketing and everything was, you know, very verbose, but understated as opposed to some of the flashier bands. And I think just thinking of Tragedy, I was going to say, is it the music that obviously the music attracts you, but is it also sort of their unwillingness to be lauded and paraded around that appeals to you at all?
Well,
that underground ethos that they seem to have.
Fugazi too.
Always adopted.
Yeah, it's respectable. It's definitely respectable. I mean, I was always ready to be exploited. You know, it just never happened.
Well, maybe that's it. Maybe I give you too much credit. I always felt like it was a calculated effort to. to not be sort of, and I don't even know what it is. I'm having a hard time articulating, but I feel, you know, in my brain, Shai Hulud isn't a band that I would have ever, you know, considered to be almost on the cusp of desperation for attention. But perhaps it's, as you said, just no one ever
we never
did
got
that for you.
But the truth is, we always wanted attention, but I don't think that we would have done we wouldn't have done anything out of our wheelhouse to get it. You know, and that depends on what you're comfortable with. You know, what I'm comfortable with is probably a hell of a lot more than what Fugazi and Tragedy are comfortable with.
Sure.
You know, I mean, my band has t-shirts to start, you know, whereas Fugazi doesn't, from unless something's changed, I don't believe they ever had a legitimate t-shirt. So yeah, I was always ready to be exploited, but we never really got that opportunity. But again, you know, think of a band like Propagandhi. You know, Propagandhi is a band that wouldn't want to be overly exploited either. And yeah, I can't say that I'm that noble.
Gotcha. Understood. And yeah, I guess Fugazi would always be sort of
the kings.
Yeah. I still, you know, I was a big Fugazi fan back in the day.
Still am.
Yeah. That whole $5 ticket thing. And, I should say I still am, but not to the degree that I'm listening to new music, because they don't have any, which really sucks. But for as long as they were putting out new music, I was, you know, a fan, but particularly, you know, Repeater and the 13 song Comp and, you know, those first few records. And I did have the I saw Fugazi once and I wish I had seen him more. But that I think that was on the Repeater tour, actually. I mean, I was just, you know, I don't know if I was 16 or what, but that was definitely impressive. And the fact that I think that ticket was like $5, you know, they were a band that could have, you know, gotten so much more money than obviously they chose to accept, which is truly noble.
It really is. I never got a chance to see Fugazi. I think they came to South Florida quite a few times, but there was always something. I was sick. And after a while, even today, I'm not a big, well, today it's not even possible, but I'm not a big concert goer. I used to be when I was a teenager, but I got all of it out, you know, I got all of it out of my system. I've seen Metallica, I've seen Slayer, I've seen Death, I've seen the Dead Milkmen, you know, I've seen They Might Be Giants. I'm all set.
I hear you. I can't be bothered to leave my house for a lot of things, let alone going to a show. But I think that's a common thing. I mean, I respect anyone that's, you know, in their 40s and above that are still like diligently going to shows, and especially heavy shows, not so much Metallica's, but more of the, you know, the underground or younger. Because I would, even when I was like 28 and was like, you know, at a hardcore show or something, I always felt like an elder statesman. It's like, I don't want to be here. I just feel it feels too awkward. I should be at home reading poetry or something.
You both should be right? Ashamed.
I stopped going to shows on a regular basis so long ago. I mean, I think the last show that I went to, a band that I already mentioned, but Voivod came to Philly a couple of years ago, and my friend and I just, we couldn't pass it up. We had to go see Voivod. So,
yeah, I hear you. Certain bands, you know, I saw when I was young, Primus was a big band for me.
Sure.
And they came to my town a few years ago, this Reading, PA, which is like, you know, 80, 90,000 people, but Primus had never been here ever. And I just, you know, I felt like I'd be betraying my younger self if I didn't, you know, venture out of my Hobbit home here and go see it.
Was that your last show you went to?
That might have been. Yeah, I think Lamb of God was, I thought, I think when we were talking to Willie, I think I said Lamb of God was the last show I went to. because that came to Reading and Clutch was there. And, you know, I was a big fan of both those, or, you know, I'm a fan of those bands. But, yeah, upon further review, it was Primus and Mastodon. And, yeah, I haven't seen a show since.
When was that, though?
That was like 3 or 4 years ago.
I was talking to JP yesterday. JP is the camera guy for us for in-person pre-COVID interviews. But anyway, we were discussing how long it's been since, because me and JP are older as well. We're not 40, but we're close to it. And we're not 40 because Alex referred to anyone at the age of 40. But we're not there yet. But you know, we're single digits until there. But we go to shows all the time prior to COVID, and we were just kind of lamenting yesterday and reflecting that it's almost a year since we've been to a show, and it's crazy because I guess, like I said to him, I guess this is what normal people do that don't go to shows.
Yeah, yep. I don't appreciate that. I appreciate it, but it doesn't affect me the way it does you, for that reason that I don't go to shows more as much as I, you know, well, at all. But if I was, you know, still a frequent show goer, yeah, that I could definitely see that as being a real catastrophe, frankly.
Yeah, I enjoy when I'm out on tour. I really enjoy watching even the opening bands. If I'm out and I'm especially in that mindset, like I said, being out on tour, you know, I think the last time we toured with Sick of It All, I don't think I missed a show that they played. Same thing with Propagandhi. Or when I love those European festivals, like, you know, it's now it's called Hellfest in France.
Yep. Yeah,
you know, I love going there. I mean, I saw, you know, a newer incarnation of Thin Lizzy at Hellfest. We saw the Scorpions, saw Coroner, Bad Brains, DRI, Raw Power. So, you know, Iron Maiden, Slayer, Opeth. I could keep going on. But
how can you have Thin Lizzy without Phil?
The guy kicked ass. That's okay. All I can tell you. He's not Phil, you know, but he was great, and it was awesome to see them. Yeah, so when I'm in that mindset, like I said, if I'm out on tour, then I enjoy it. I've got my earplugs handy, but if I'm at home and a band I love like DRI is playing down the street, as shameful as it is to say, it's going to be hard for me to get out to go see them.
I think a lot of it is proximity, too. I think, you know, Dave, you're like, you know, around a bunch of venues, whereas I was, you know, in Reading there, you know, we had some tiny venues that, like, you know, little podunk bands would play that I might like. But if I wanted to see Fugazi or I wanted to see Sepultura or, you know, that type of band, I had to go to Philly, which was about an hour and a half away. So it was like, oh, you know, you don't just leave home, walk a couple blocks and see a show. And for me, it was like an entire like afternoon and evening event where I'd have transportation. And so I think that just occurred to me too. I probably would have seen so many more shows if they were just right around the corner. And now, you know, even the last 10, I'm even farther away from the city now. I'm in like the freaking, you know, total rural area. So I'd like to think that even, you know, in my advanced age, if there were shows taking place, you know, nearby, I might, you know, actually get my ass out of the house and go see them. I mean, how far are you from a venue, Matt?
Me? I'm not far from the Philly venues. I live in New Jersey. My local airport's the Philadelphia airport. So usually when shows go to Philly, it's considered local. But I can only think of a handful of bands that I went out to see. Again, Voivod.
How long have you been in Philly? Or near Philly?
Near Philly, geez, it's been about 10 years now.
Oh, really?
What the fuck?
I didn't know you were that close.
Yeah, I'm. You know, I don't. You know, who do I talk? No one.
Yeah. I would have tried to, you know, meet up with you somewhere.
Well,
I don't go often, but I don't even know what's open in Philly anymore. I mean, back in the day, it was like Truck and TLA and Tower Theater. I'm so like out of touch.
I think the Electric Factory is still open.
Yeah, the Electric Factory. I forgot.
I went and saw, you know, I went and saw Newfound Glory there, but that was only just to see friends, you know.
Right, sure, sure.
You know, Chad wanted me to go, so I went to go see him. Propagandi and Comeback Kid played. I think I went to see that. And I drove an hour, I think it's to the Starland to go see E-Town.
Well, you're a proper Jersey boy now then, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, you know, with my love for Misfits, Dead Guy, Turning Point, E-Town, I think I've always been, the Jersey's been deep in me. So,
Were Poughkeepsie, I don't even know how to say it properly.
Poughkeepsie,
but,
yep.
Yeah, you were, once upon a time, I think I probably knew what came first. So you were in Florida, then went there. Is that
how? Yeah, yeah. I was born on Long Island as a baby, as you are born. So I was born on Long Island, lived there until I was five, grew up in South Florida, which is where I consider really my home. Because I spent most of my formative year, well, all of my formative years there. And then after South Florida was Poughkeepsie and then New Jersey.
Okay.
And I have absolutely no idea where the hell I'll end up. I mean, it could be anywhere.
Yeah, well, speaking of which, have you been writing any music? Will we ever hear any new Shai Alud music?
Yeah, yeah, I think so. As most people now know, well, maybe they know, but Jay from Reign Supreme is singing. You know, we didn't get a chance to do anything.
I guess maybe if I ran a music website, I would know that. But for some reason, I feel like I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's funny because we posted it on Instagram and Facebook, and I was hoping that you would pick it up. But I don't think it got picked up.
You know, feel free to, you know, give me a nudge, man. Help me out. It'd be mutually beneficial.
It's so long now, and people. Well, not so long, but about a year that we've made the decision mutually. So I don't know that it would be worth posting now. But yeah, about a year ago, Jay said, I think we should do Shai Alud. You know, this is when I was in school and I was fairly certain that I would never. Well, I don't want to say never, but I was fairly certain that Shai Alud had been resigned to hobby status, you know, and he was the one that got me kind of perked up and said, okay, well, we don't have to make it a career, but there's no reason why we can't continue. So will there be new Shai Alud? Yeah, I've been working on stuff very, very slowly. It would be way, way premature to try to give you any timeline of when something would come out. Like if anyone thought it was bad before with 5 years in between albums, forget about it. Now, who knows? Now it'll be like 10 years for three songs or something. But,
who's in Shai Alud now since I'm so out of the loop.
Okay. Well, we do have a full lineup and, it's people that have been, like I said before, either in the band or in the community for a long time. On drums, we have our friend Mo Watson. People might know Mo from, he played in a band called Vagus Nerve with Doc Coyle from God Forbid. Yeah. He also, I think he did a stint in Dead Water Drowning.
I remember those dudes.
Yeah, so, you know, he's a somewhat known drummer. On guitar, we have my friend Mark, who he had a few different bands on Long Island, but I think he toured the most with Full Blown Chaos.
Okay.
He was in Full Blown Chaos for a while. My good friend, Eric Dellen, who's one of the two singers in Zombie Apocalypse, he's now picked up the bass. And you know, he also, like I mentioned earlier, he sang for Shai Hulud about 10 years ago, maybe more than that, just for a stint. He did a demo. He did the demo with us that got assigned to Metal Blade. But he had his own band. He had his own band called Shallow Water Grave that some people might know.
Yep.
I don't, is that familiar to you?
I don't know. Yes, I actually I just stumbled upon one of their CDs the other day. Rearranged things.
Yeah, it's a great CD they put out. That's Dylan. And then Jay and myself. Jay, obviously, people know now from End and, of course, Reign Supreme. So that's the lineup. We had shows. We were supposed to do Manchester Punk Fest last year and then follow that up with like five or six shows in the mainland of Europe. But COVID hit. And that was taken out. But I'm hoping that Furnace Fest is still going to happen later this year. It's scheduled for September.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, later in September it's supposed to happen. So I'm hoping that we can still do that. And next year there's some light talk about us going to Europe. So Shai Hulud will be around. It's definitely a nostalgia band. I get that. We'll put out new music, and hopefully it'll be good enough that people will want to hear it. But we know what's going to, you know, what's what. We'll go out and play. We'll play, quote unquote, the hits and include some new music if people want to hear it. Yeah. So, yeah, we'll be a nostalgia band. And that's great. I will be thrilled to continue playing music for another 20 more years. It's always been my passion. And just because you can't do it full time doesn't mean you can't do it at all.
Yeah, no doubt. Now, Shai Hulud is your deal, right? If you're not in it, it's not happening. You're the legal owner, I assume, of the whole entity, whatever that encompasses at this point. Are you guys still even under contract with Metal Blade, or you fulfilled your deal?
I think we're still technically under contract, but they've always been good with us being loose with the contract. Like, you know, we did an EP about 5 years ago with No Sleep Records. So, I think that we still are under contract. I mean, we never got anything saying that we've been dropped, thankfully. at this point right now, you know, without knowing better or worse, I would assume that when Shai Hulud puts out a new album, it'll be on Metal Blade. So, but I could be wrong about that. That's where we are now. I think you asked a question in there that I forever.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I jumped on the back of the first question without giving you a chance to answer it. That was just that you were effectively Shai Hulud at this point.
Oh, yeah.
You're the boss, basically.
This is terrible.
No one else could claim ownership of the band.
Plenty of people could. They want, go for it.
Legally?
Legally, I don't know. I probably have, a lot of proof that if that were to ever happen, that I'm the quote unquote owner, which
I don't even know what a band of your size, I don't know how, trademarks and I don't know what level that is or isn't important.
No, we were never incorporated, but we had a DBA and we had a business license for a while.
Yeah.
There was even a Shai Hulud credit card at one point in time.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's long gone. I guess Shai Hulud stems from me. I've been, there are other people that have been in the band that have definitely put their heart and soul into it. So I could never fairly say that I'm the heart and soul of the band, because the guys in the band now are putting their heart and soul into it. So we're all the heart and soul. But, I'm the longest guy that's been in the band that's put his heart and soul into it. So,
yeah, I mean, I think there's, individuals much like, we discussed Thin Lizzy very briefly. I think if Matt Fox wasn't in Shai Hulud, it would be quite awkward, to put it kindly.
There's been Journey without Steve Perry. Mm-hmm. There's been
and there shouldn't be.
There's been Thin Lizzy without Phil Lynott. There's been shit. There's been Bad Brains without HR. You know, so
yeah,
these are harder things to.
But those aren't good things, at least in my. Granted, they can put on compelling performances and still release viable music. It just, you know, I think that crosses the line where you got to rename the band. I mean, that's just.
Well, I'm counting seeing Journey with the replacement singer on my list of bands I've already seen. So. Because he definitely does rock it, and yeah.
Oh, I'm sure. It's just, you know, it's you got to have an asterisk by it, if nothing else. certainly more some bands more so than others, but I mean, Journey without Steve Perry or Queen without Freddie Mercury. I mean, he's just
Hey, that Adam Lambert guy does a great job
again. Right, they're talented, and they obviously they can. Sell tickets and, you know, have tons of fans. It's just, you know, it's not Queen and it's not Journey. And on a much smaller scale, it wouldn't be Shai Hulud. And I'm saying.
I think if anything, if it would suffer at all, because listen,
would you let it go on without you? You know, if you said, I'm done playing music and the other guys are like, so you wouldn't, you know, for me personally, I would, you know, I don't know that I'd be able to give up control of something that was such a part of my life, you know, that someone else might just run into the ground or tarnish my legacy. I guess I don't have the I don't know what adjective or noun I'm looking for, the fortitude or the the generosity to sort of bestow that confidence in someone.
Yeah,
for some people,
I would be fine with it. Okay. Because you could certainly replace me talent wise. I'm not a great talent. I'm not a great guitar player. I'm average on my best day. There was a time maybe 10 years ago where I was above average on my best day. Now back down to average. So you could definitely get a player that could do what I do, no problem. Where Shai Hulud might suffer would be the creativity department.
Well, right. And you could say that about any band, really. I mean, short of, you know, Van Halen or something, you know, could find somebody more talented, but it's not the talent. It's not the talent. You know that. It's, you know, it's the lifeblood. It's the soul.
Sure.
That's replace.
Fair. Well, I think you must have heard that Kiss plans to have members take over for them.
And that's, I don't know, that's just a gimmick, you know, it's just, it becomes.
I love it. I love it.
I can appreciate it from a certain, you know, to a certain degree, but it does to me, again, to me personally speaking, it does tarnish. And I was never a Kiss fan, so I don't give two shits about Kiss, but
I think I saw
that about another band. And to me, it would just, you know, it would hurt a little bit.
I think I saw a tweet that you wrote once said something like, I liked Kiss when I, because of the makeup.
That's right. I still remember being like a little kid and having a Kiss poster on my wall. I didn't even know what they sounded like. I just, as a child, I was like, damn, that looks cool. But then
same for me.
At some point I heard them and I was like, this fucking sucks. What the hell? Thank God I don't have that poster up anymore.
I still like Kiss quite a bit. They were big for me growing up. But like you, I didn't get into them. I got into them first because of the makeup. Yeah, and it took me probably a good 5-10 years to get into them musically. But anyway, we don't need.
That's fine. And Kiss has I'm qualifying everything. I don't want to shit on Kiss or their fans. They've obviously. They've done their thing and plenty of people appreciate them. I'm sure if I sat down and gave them the time, you know, I'd find some things I like. But yeah, that was just one band that, you know, never really resonated with me. There's a lot of those.
Everybody in Shai Hulud except for me absolutely hates Kiss. So
okay,
all right, I know there's one thing we're not listening to in the van.
All right, that's fair. Well, I don't even know what freaking time is it, Dave.
We're like 75 minutes.
Okay. Well, I think I've been a bit loquacious tonight, and I apologize. I haven't talked to many people lately, and I'm taking it out on you two.
He's had to get it off his chest.
Now, we're here to hear Matt, but I've usurped some of the airtime.
Oh, that's fine. Nice to talk to you.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I've been dealing with you, you know, off and on for 20 years, and I've never actually conversed with you.
My fault, I think we talked on the phone.
Did we?
Yeah, I think so.
That may, perhaps your memory's better than mine. I've talked to very few people on the phone, even, and it's always something random. Not so much you, but you know, it'll be something like, not so much anymore because I don't have them. But I've gotten calls from people to have a comment removed, you know, on a news item that I never would have, or a text from some random person asking me to do this or that I have no relationship with, but. I'm not, you know, unlike my peers who go to shows and hang out and stuff, I'm just like a hermit in my home, and I really have very little connections to the people that I've covered for so long, for better or for worse. It's probably a good thing that I don't have to feel guilty when I write about their arrest.
Yeah, hey, it's the same for me. I'm a proud hermit, and, you know, you started off the interview by acknowledging that. I mean, it must be known by most people that I'm, you know, I've always been a loner and a proud hermit. So
I just figure you just sit around and watch sci-fi movies and read Dune over and over again or something. I don't
know. And, well, to dispel any rumors or myths, I'm not a big reader. And okay.
That's surprising because someone, you know, with the lyrics and the I jokingly called it verbosity, but just it seemed like someone who was well read and enjoyed you know, literature.
Yeah, well, I do enjoy literature. I just hate reading. I think I'm dyslexic. I don't know, ADD.
Audiobooks?
Even audiobooks are difficult for me. I zone out really easily. But if I watch movies, I do love sci-fi, but you know, I'm probably even more fond of dramas and romantic comedies. So
that's fair. I just watched 2 seasons of this Cobra Kai show, and
I watched.
I'm embarrassed to mention it publicly, but I just did. So
yeah. I did. I watched all 10 episodes of the second season on January 1st. So
it's a good show. It's predictable and whatever, but yeah,
it's not even
it's a
that
great balance of humor and nostalgia and whatever.
There's some atrocious acting. There's some really corny plot points.
Yep.
But I like keeping up with Johnny and Daniel.
Yeah, it's a nice dynamic. I think it's aiding the cause is the fact they really don't look that different. You know, I can't believe Ralph Macchio is like almost 60 years old.
Really?
Yeah, I think he's 59. I think I had to look it up at some point. I'm like, all right, 1984 was Karate Kid. He wasn't like 10. So, you know, he's got to be up there. But yeah, I would have thought like, you know, 53 or something. But yeah, I think he turned 60 later this year.
Wow. Good for him.
Yeah, no doubt.
Good genes.
I can't. Yeah, I would have been screwed if I had been Karate Kid because the whole, you know. Hairless thing just wouldn't resonate the same way, but yeah, I don't know. Everybody likes it around here, the young and the old, but even the people who don't, you know, didn't watch Karate Kid as a child, so they're definitely, you know, hitting the right notes there. But yeah, when you said dramatic comedy, that kind of came to mind.
For me, it's like gas station candy that you get for a dollar, like those little peach rings.
Yeah.
They're shitty, but you love them.
Yeah.
That's karate. That's Cobra Kai to me. It's not food for the brain by any means, but it only costs a buck and it's delicious.
Yeah. I think that anything that keeps me coming back, you know, I applaud. And yeah, I had no problem binging on that show. So
I have not seen any of it.
Well, I had no desire to, you know, my wife kind of forced me to, and I came around and I appreciate it. But yeah, I was not lifting a finger to watch that show. It was just forced upon me. So,
yeah, I have to admit that I don't want to say excited, but I was curious because I'm a big fan of Karate Kid and Karate Kid 2.
Okay. So
because of that, I was really thrilled. And I, you know, like a lot of people, I imagine, you know, was thrilled that William Zabka, the guy who plays Johnny, was still around. I had, you know, I hear that he was still active. I had.
No. Yeah. He's one of those guys. It's like, you know, he could have told me, I don't know, robbed a bank and was shot by police in 1994. And I would have been like, yeah, that sucks. But I would have believed it. But,
yeah.
Yeah.
Because we, you know, it's not like he's been in the public eye so much. So, right. Yeah, it's a fun show. But, you know,
another, it is what it is.
Another show I haven't watched yet, but I'm assuming you probably have as well. Do you like the Star Wars and the Mandalorian?
Yeah, I've watched both seasons. I kind of went into it with some hesitancy because Star Wars kind of lost its luster for me with the prequels and, you know, the reissues and everything. So, but the Mandalorian kind of got me re-excited about Star Wars. It's I don't know that it's as great as everyone says it is, but it is definitely very good and a hell of a lot of fun.
Interesting. I haven't checked it out at all yet.
It's definitely, if you ever like Star Wars in any capacity, it's definitely worth your while.
All right.
I have very little to say in this regard. I did see, you know, the two, I don't know, Force Awakens and Last Jedi, but, and those were good. But for me as, you know, a child, the first three movies, not episodes 1, 2, and 3, were just, you know, they were special to me as a child, and then I kind of checked out. I tried watching that first, and I don't even know enough to say what was 4, and I don't know if,
Jar Jar whatever. Binks.
Yeah, what was it? Is that one? Is that's that one. 4 or 1? Okay, so yeah, okay, yeah, those the prequels. So I tried watching that episode 1, and I made it through halfway, and I think I threw up in my mouth and turned it off, and that's I was done with that.
Yeah, it's a horrible movie.
I saw in Florida, I saw Phantom Menace episode 1 in the Dollar Theater. That was all I was willing to get, to spend. And I remember saying to myself or to my friends, all I want for my dollar is I want to see Star Wars in big letters with the fanfare, you know, and let it scroll down the way it did in the original movies. And I got that. And I checked out, and everything else was garbage.
Yeah, I skipped school for that, and I was severely let down because that was like a really. I remember walking out of the movie theater just going like, "What the hell?"
Yeah, I think most of us that were, how old were you when you saw it?
14, 15.
Oh, you were even let down at that age, huh? Wow, good for you.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's that movie, and again, knowing very little of it, I just think that is roundly considered a misstep, and they've redeemed themselves to some degree going forward. But I've heard good things about, you know, The Mandalorian, but I again, much like listening to Kiss, I can't be bothered to spend time on that.
Perfect. Well, if you were forced to see it the way you were forced to see Cobra Kai, you would be more entertained by Mandalorian than you would be Cobra Kai, I think.
Okay.
But
really noted.
Yeah, I'm not rushing you out to see it. So, all right. So where are we at? You guys want to call it a night?
I think we've covered pretty much everything that, you know, since you have no music to promote at this point.
that's your fault, man. It's my fault. Zombie Apocalypse put out an extended EP last year. That's anyone true, can go check true, that true. Out.
Good
that,
point.
I like that one a lot. So yeah. If all I'm right. The if I'm the plug anything, Life Without Pain is a Fucking Fantasy is the last Zombie Apocalypse. Not the last, but it's the latest that we did. Yep. So everyone could go check that out if you're so inclined.
We should end it with this. We should end it with this. Just really quick.
Yeah.
Which project do you enjoy more? Shai Halud or Zombie?
Easy answer. And probably an answer that will piss people off, but Zombie Apocalypse.
Okay. I kind of felt that for some reason. Because you revert back to a lot of like metal.
Yeah, yeah. And with Zombie Apocalypse, I think the reason that it's more fun is because it's not only me. Well, now with Shiloh, with the current members that we have, I'm not the only one contributing. And Fletcher, of course, contributed a lot, as well as Geert, for that matter, to Blood Ill-Tempered. But with Zombie Apocalypse, our other singer, Ronen, he writes the majority of the lyrics. So it's always fun for me to listen. It's never fun for me to listen to Shai Halud. It's always fun for me to listen to Zombie Apocalypse because I'm hearing somebody else's thoughts and ideas. So, yeah, and Zombies, I mean, Shai Halud is lighthearted personality-wise, but the music, the lyrics, you know, can get kind of heavy and deep. And Zombie gets heavy and deep, too, but the band's called Zombie Apocalypse, so it's always going to be fun. That's my answer. Cool. Zombie Apocalypse is definitely much more fun. I hope I didn't upset anybody by saying that.
Well, no offense to Shai Halud fans as well, and I've caught you guys live a handful of times in my years as well, whenever you come through Jacksonville, which I feel like is a lot, and over the years a lot. But I do enjoy Zombie more.
Hey, that's fair. That's fair.
But I'm more a metal guy too, so.
Yeah, sure. I'm glad anyone's listening to anything. You know, I'm flattered. I'm humbled that anything that I do can still be even remotely relevant all this time later. So
there you go. That's the right attitude. I think we should end it there. All Although right. I will say, Matt, next time you get a new singer, just let me know. Don't post it on Instagram and expect me to find it because I'm just not a very, good investigator.
Yeah. Well, when we have some things that are confirmed, as far as shows, I'll let you know, and you could kind of announce that.
Yes, I appreciate that.
Yeah, I definitely will do that. All right, my friends. Hey, thanks so much for talking to me, listening to me stutter and say, for that matter, too many times.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
I enjoyed the conversation, which is probably why it went on for too long. I need a big clock here to. I don't even know what time it was. So, appreciate it, man.
All right, my friends. Take care, huh?
Take care, you man.
Too. All right, see ya.
Later.
Hey, this is Steve Choi, host of the Musicians Guild podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. Within the four walls of the Musicians Guild, we'll be discussing the habits, idiosyncrasies, experiences, and general psychology of my friends and peers all involved with music in various capacities. Listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com.